Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Oh my God, he sounds froggy again. No, it's just we've had nothing but fog and mist here in the sunny south for the past 3 or 4 days. Incredible weather. I mean, it's just this part of global climate change has been a real shocker. And yet, the right-wingers, the crazy people, still insist there's nothing going on. I get this from an authoritative source. In a move that they are calling the only humane thing to do, the other Republican candidates for president have agreed not to tell Rick Perry where the next debate is being held. This decision came after the two-debate weekend just passed, in which Rick Perry put in a performance that, in the words of former Utah Governor John Huntsman, was, quote, brave but painful to watch, end quote. So immediately following the final New Hampshire debate Sunday morning, a rather awkward scene unfolded on stage. Rick Perry asked the other candidates, so where's everyone going now? And Newt Gingrich, looking down at his shoes, said, I don't know, Rick. Perry persisted, isn't there going to be another debate after this? Mitt Romney said, not that I know of, Rick. I'll let you know if I hear anything. After Perry left the stage, Romney told a reporter that he, quote, felt bad about fibbing to Rick, but added, quote, putting him out there on stage again would just be so cruel. End quote. Elsewhere in the NFL on Sunday, God defeated Satan in overtime. Did you see that? By the way, the Borowitz Report provides us with the information about not telling Rick Perry where the next debate is. Did you? Yeah, I did. I watched. I will watch playoff games. I will watch the Super Bowl. I've said that, even though the whole concept of professional sports to me is just madness. But there's nothing like it on a Sunday afternoon, kicking back with some Glenn Livett and just and a big bowl of popcorn and watching professional football, right? Whew. Tim Tebow, though, of course, is a massive irritation with his, I don't know, it's amazing to me. Either Jesus or God, one of the two, took time off yesterday to make sure that the Broncos would win. Of course, you notice those pass receivers, when they would catch those passes from Tim Tebow, they would never fall down on their knees and immediately crucify themselves on the football field in recognition of heavenly intervention. God, I hate public displays of crappy-ass religiosity, especially in a sporting event. And then the press conference afterwards, Tebow, I'd like to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I'd like to thank my Lord and Savior, Lord Satan. You know, I'm waiting for one of them to say that. Oh, man. You know, you're not supposed to talk about this, I guess. Apparently, there were 8 trillion tweets after Tebow threw the pass that resulted in the 80-yard touchdown. First play from scrimmage when the overtime started, right? It was a great play. But the tweets started immediately. And then, where did I see it today? I guess online someplace. People not mocking, but in complete agreement with Tebow, people all over the country bowing down with that, you know, right arm, forearm over the bended knee and the left hand over the face. And you know, this to me is just vile. It's just vile for these fundamentalist Christians to really believe that there's divine intervention in a pass for a football game in Denver, Colorado. Oh, my God. Oh, well. It's their religion, not mine. So they can pervert it and twist it and destroy it to whatever extent they want to. Have at it, boys and girls, really. Barack Obama has done it again. He let Bill Daley go, his chief of staff. It's about time. But Obama is not learning his lesson. He put in place another banker, the former COO of Citigroup's alternative investment unit. This guy is, what's his name? Jacob Liu, L-E-W. He oversaw a Citigroup unit that profited off the housing collapse and financial crisis by investing in a hedge fund king who correctly predicted the eventual subprime meltdown. And he now finds himself involved in the center of the U.S. government's fraud case against Goldman Sachs. What is Obama doing? But here he goes again. And, of course, these half-witted, moronic Republicans will get down to the South Carolina debate or whenever the next debate is and talk about Barack Obama as a socialist. Oh, my God, these people just make me so angry. But there's Jacob, too. Jacob, too. Now, he has spent 30 years in various positions throughout government. But he served as chief operating officer for Citigroup Alternative Investments in 2008. And he served as the top aide to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton since the Obama administration came into office, according to Huffington Post. Early in his unit's investments in a hedge fund that bet on the housing market to collapse, he was right there. At the time, Citigroup's alternative investments unit was a $54 billion behemoth that participated in the kinds of activities that would be largely limited under the coming financial reform bill, if not totally eliminated. God. Oh, well, it doesn't really make that much difference, does it? But just so you know that Barack Obama's new chief of staff is another one of the bankers that has come from the very industry that has put this country where it is. I don't quite understand, but it's not for me to understand. It is only for me to accept. That's all. So, what else we got here? Oh, the Pope. The Pope is gone all anti-gay now. He's doubling down on the anti-gay thing. Pope Benedict, the Hitler Youth guy. He said today that gay marriage was one of several threats to the traditional family that undermined, quote, the future of humanity itself, end quote. Gay marriage? Right up there with nuclear destruction and global climate change and extinction level events, and gay marriage is right up there? a threat to the traditional family, a threat that undermines, quote, the future of humanity itself. Wow, you know, I'm going to have to talk to some gay folk and find out if they realize. But the, and then the people wonder why gay people are targets of violence and bigotry. The Pope himself has identified gay marriage as a threat to the future of humanity itself. All you need to learn at my ministry, pay no attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my battle cry down in Hollywood. I'm with the God Squad.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. It just never fails to... You know, I mentioned this Friday, I think. It just makes me so damn angry that... you know, if the Pope were to say... That, as probably popes back in the 1920s probably did, but if the Pope were to say that Jewish marriage was one of several threats to the traditional family that undermined the future of humanity itself, if the Pope were to say that today, he would probably be in a lot of trouble. So... Rather than say that, he says that gay marriage, folks who happen to be gay, who want to form a civil contract that has nothing to do with this stinky pope, this Hitler Youth pope. I mean, we really do live in an insane world. We really, really do. When you have, where is it, Uganda, where... gay folk can be executed. This country where gay people can't form a simple marriage contract outside of any of the poisonous religions that are seething and operating and causing their destruction in this country. In Israel, a gay rights parade can result in Orthodox Jews attacking people in that country who happen to be gay and beating them to death if given a chance. What the hell? My God. The Pope was at some kind of a diplomatic corps address at the Vatican. You know, all these freaks who have relations. Why have diplomatic relations with this little junky-ass corner of Rome where the Vatican City sits? I mean, what is that? 180 representatives from 180 countries showed up for this bigoted son of a bitch to lay out what he laid out about gay people being a threat to the future of humanity itself. Gay marriage. Of course, you have to be a gay person to have a gay marriage. He told these diplomats that the education of children needed proper settings, his words, settings, and that, quote, pride of place goes to the family based on the marriage of a man and woman, end quote. This from a man who oversees an organization that rapes, vaginally and anally rapes children, and has for centuries, and is doing it now. Rapes children. Brutally rapes and molests children. But, gay marriage is a threat that undermines the future of humanity itself. Not priests taking children into dark corners of the sanctuary and penetrating them and raping them. Oh, no! That's okay! But two gay adults who want to put together a marriage contract and live just a normal, quiet life, that is a threat to the future of humanity itself. And you people wonder why I see the Catholic Church as one of the most violent, vicious, monstrous organizations ever put together by the sick minds of human beings? We have a lot of Catholic people who listen to this program. I don't know how you do it. Oh, not listen to this program. I mean, be a Catholic. How do you do that? How do you align yourself with a filthy, degenerate organization like this? How? How do you do it? An organization that sat there and encouraged the extermination of 6 million Jews. How do you do it? How do you call yourself a Catholic? How do you participate in this? I cannot get my mind around that, okay? Whew. Oh, my God. One leading opponent of gay marriage in the U.S. is New York Archbishop Timothy Dolan. Him? The Pope is going to turn him into a cardinal next month. I don't even want to know what that ceremony is about. Dolan fought against gay marriage before it became legal in New York last June. And this past September, he sent a letter to Obama criticizing the Obama administration's decision not to support a federal ban on gay marriage. You see, this is how sick these bastards are. In that letter, Dolan, who is the holds the powerful post of president of the U.S. Bishops Conference, he said to Obama, such a policy, quote, could precipitate a national conflict between church and state of enormous proportions, end quote. I see another threat from the Catholic Church. What, Mr. Dolan, more bloodshed, more pogroms, another inquisition? You sick bastard.
Revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. I really should stop railing against these sick Catholics. I really should. So many of these people are so mentally ill, you can make the case that they're not responsible for their actions. Of course, that only goes so far, because when someone who has this sort of mental illness and puts it and has a position of power and puts it into action, of course, millions of people can die. And they can die justifiably according to the religious freaks. You know, they deserve to die. And that's why. I hope that the Catholic Church would soon start to dissolve, to disintegrate. Of course, my fervent hope would be that all religion would disintegrate. Just go away. Just disappear. Free people up. Let people have their minds back. If you remember, a couple of years ago, the Hitler Youth Pope Benedict decreed that Anglicans who leave their church, in some instances because they feel that the Anglican Church has become too liberal, that those people can find a home in Catholicism. Okay, I have an offer to all Catholics, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, I offer you a place in the religion of MM. Let me explain to you what it is. It's nothing. We have no priesthood. We have no tradition. We have no requirements. There are no dues. You don't have to do anything to become a member of the Church of MM. All you have to do is declare yourself free from this religious garbage. And instantly, you become a member of the Church of MM. Well, the MM, by the way, stands for Marilyn Monroe. Bless her heart. Okay, that's enough. That's enough on you know, tonight's rant on the Catholic Church. From Prairie 2, running against Bain from left and right. Republican Party Chairman Rancid Priebus was out on Fox Sunday trumpeting that Americans shouldn't vote for Obama since they aren't better off than they were 3 years ago. 3 years ago. Oh, gee, I wonder why. By that logic, there are about 3 million Americans, the 1%, that should vote for Obama. They are not only better off, but the few thousand at the top have captured trillions of dollars of America's wealth. Yet they oppose Obama with a white hot fury and feigned righteous patriotic fervor. It's not because they bleed for the little guy that's been left behind. They believe the little guy should pull himself up by his bootstraps. Not that they ever did. And they've been stealing everyone else's bootstraps. But you see, they feel threatened by Obama. But not because he's impeded them in any meaningful way so far. Although you must consider, Prairie 2 writes, how bad things would be if they truly had a free hand. They oppose him because he speaks the unspeakable truth every now and then. They're afraid people are catching on. And I'll point out again that even Republicans don't want to vote for Republicans. The way Bain Capital does business is actually being used against Romney by Republican candidates. Not because they oppose those kind of tactics. They've all gotten rich from the decriminalization of piracy as a business plan. It's because it's the only way to get votes. Republicans railing against Romney! That he costs people jobs is the only way Republicans can get votes. Think about that. But I digress. Prairie 2 goes on. Fewer Republicans voted in the Iowa caucus than 4 years ago, even though the number of registered Republicans is way up in that swing state. New Hampshire isn't expected to do any better. The voters want that mythical Republican that will deliver on trickle-down economics, make free trade work, spread the wealth, oops, something Obama said, and make us safe from terrorism by killing Osama bin Laden. Okay. Even Republicans are getting tired of the empty rhetoric. Obama passed the Republican alternative to Hillary Care. To be fair, it also has a lot of protections the Republicans didn't offer. Small businesses used to the base of the Republican Party, but people like Mitt Romney have driven them out of business. Small businesses used to be the base of the Republican Party. People on the right will cling to their guns and religion only so long. The kids and the grandkids are living in the basement, but the Republicans are telling them to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, all the while cutting local police, fire protection, and closing schools. Their jobs have gone to China and starting to sink in how this happened. They're worse off than 3 years ago, but 3 years ago, they were worse off than 8 years before that. And the same people are back telling them the same thing. Obama started talking about the end of outsourcing in his Saturday radio address. It's still just talk, but it's the right kind of talk. It could be just part of Obama's strategy of running against Bain Capital. He isn't proposing anything to stop them. That part will be up to the rest of us. From prairienumeral2.com, go to his website. Once again, that last sentence, it's almost as though Prairie 2 is, well, I don't know. It's up to the rest of us. Oh, yeah, one other thing from the Hitler Youth Pope. While he was talking to the diplomats today, he remembered what he said in his little speech were the, quote, numerous victims, end quote, of religiously motivated terrorism. He remembers, I don't know what that means. I guess if the Pope remembers something, it is a direct flow up to God, right? I remember the victims. Up it goes into heaven, and that does, I don't know. Anyway, he has remembered the what he called the numerous victims of religiously motivated terrorism. Benedict said acts of terrorism were especially prevalent last year in Asia and Africa, citing violence in Pakistan and Nigeria. An explosion Christmas Day ripped through a Catholic church, killing at least 15, while last spring's Pakistan's sole Christian government minister was assassinated. Do-do-do-do-do-do. The Pope also expressed hope today that there would be a rapid end to bloodshed in Syria. Do-do-do-do-do-do. But the Pope is the source of violence. The Pope is the source of religiously motivated terrorism against, quote, numerous victims, end quote. That's what the Catholic Church advocates. Violence against gay people. Violence. More violence. Oh, I know. Hate the sin, love the sinner. Right. Oh, my God. Right. Okay. Tell that to Pat Buchanan. No, don't, on second thought. But the way violence is advocated by right-wingers, by all Republicans, by conservatives, by libertarians, they advocate violence, too. The kind of violence that's hard to pin on them unless you pay attention. Libertarians say, stop everything! Don't give anybody a goddamn thing! Children that need Social Security because their daddy dies, screw them! That's violence. People that need help getting food on the table, screw them! That's violence. That's what libertarianism's all about. Are you kidding me? That's a Ron Paul, and I see these young people out there who claim to be supporters of Ron Paul. Ron Paul will take your Pell Grants and beat you over the goddamn head with them and then take them away from you. What is wrong with some of these young people? Oh, yeah, you know what it is? Ron Paul says he'll do away with marijuana prohibition. Oh, that's a good reason to vote for him, right, kiddos? Man. Ah, but I was talking about the Pope. So the Pope, being one of the major promoters of violence in this country, in the world, laments and remembers the numerous victims, his words, of religiously motivated terrorism. What do you call it, Mr. Pope, when you say that gay marriage is one of the premier threats to the continuation of human civilization? What the hell do you call that? Is that not terrorism? Hypocritical Nazi bastard. I hope there is a hell for these people, because the kind of the Dante-esque hell, because you know where the Hitler Youth Pope is going to wind up, which ring of that hell, don't you? We'll be right back. before the hour. Michael in Roswell says there's a very simple way to handle people like Cardinal Dolan, the one who wrote to Barack Obama and threatened him. If Obama had any sense, Michael writes, he would simply write back and say the following. Cardinal Dolan, I'm forwarding your letter to the Internal Revenue Service with a recommendation for review of the Catholic Church's tax-exempt status. Even Father Coughlin had enough sense not to jeopardize his employer's tax status. End quote. Do you all remember Father Coughlin? Coughlin. Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce it. Back in the 30s, a pro-Nazi Catholic priest like Rush Limbaugh, who was on one of the two, I think there were two NBC network, radio networks at the time, NBC Red, NBC Blue, had nothing to do with the designation Red and Blue as it is presented today. But I think he was on the Blue Network. And I think the Blue Network was the network of shows that were not, I may have this completely asked backwards, that were not all that important. Maybe it was the Red Network. But Coughlin was on the air for a couple of years and advocated in favor of the Wehrmacht and the rising tide of Nazism in Germany. He was one of the people, along with a number of U.S. industrialists and Prescott Bush, who wanted to see an alliance between Germany, England, or I should say the U.K., and the U.S. as the, the Aryan resistance to the rising yellow tide and the brown tide and the black tide. Whew. Father Coughlin. Well, every generation has its, since radio has been around, every generation has had its obscenities on the air in the form of, talk show hosts. We've had more than our share in the past 30 years. We seem to have become a cosmic nexus of the worst possible ranters. Have you gotten this thing from Pastor Bob Larson? This is not a joke, because I went to the website, boblarson.org. There is a demon test you can take. A demon test. and it only costs $9.95, I think. It says, "Dear friend, thank you for taking time to take the demon test. This may be the most important spiritual decision you have made. This test is a result of more than 30 years of research and thousands of hours in personal ministry with troubled souls. Through this vast experience, I have been able, with God's help, to design this test to quickly determine an individual's spiritual needs." Blah, 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 blah. And then it goes on to tell you what you will get once you take the demon test. And it says at the bottom of this, it says, after you've taken this test, please go to the page titled A Word About Your Spiritual Life, where we share some additional thoughts on important decisions affecting your future. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to help you to find true spiritual freedom. And when you click, you get a page that says, if you are concerned about your test score, we highly recommend that you schedule personal one-on-one time with Bob Larson. You may choose a one-hour encounter session or a full or half-day intensive session. They're held during Bob's on-the-road seminars or at the Center for Spiritual Freedom in Phoenix, Arizona. Blah, 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 blah. The first step on your journey to a new life begins with the demon test. And then it has a PayPal button where you can, it says click here. And when you click, think you're going to get the test. When you click, you get the PayPal page. And it's not a spoof. Look up boblarson.org. He bills himself as doing what Jesus did. Jesus used PayPal? Really? I had no idea. A demon test. Oh, my God. So to speak. Got to get those demons out of your life. You know, look at Sarah Palin. I mean, she had some African demon hunter. Remember that video? Huh? Casting out demons and spirits and haints and all kind of evil spirits that had congregated inside her body. Fill in your own punchline there. From Edie in Atlanta, Mike, this weekend we were watching the so-called debate, hoping for a verbal beatdown from Newt on Romney after Iowa, and while there was no showdown, Romney stooped to say how amazed he was at how few Americans were in the military fighting for our country. A blanking lie in itself. How dare he chastise others when he has at least three strapping young adult sons doing nothing? Many of us have been saying for years that these wars are so necessary to protect our craven homeland that we should have a draft where every able-bodied mother, son, and daughter should be required to serve. Will Romney or any of these chicken hawks on both sides come out strong for a lottery that takes no mind of class, race, or parentage? Hell no. And why? Because of all this fear and warmongering, it has nothing to do with the security of the United States. It's a great lie born of a false flag op known as 9/11. And we're not alone in this conviction. I can only think of over 2 million maimed and murdered brown people and their parents grieving for them. Heartache that will never end as a result of 9/11. When I hear about an American signing up or re-upping, I can only think of them as maniacs or suckers for corporate America. I don't like feeling this way, but I know of no other way to keep myself honest. Peace be upon us all someday. Edie in Atlanta. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ken in Augustine or St. Augustine. Augustine. All right. Ken, thank you. Ken, who says any message he would have included would be depressing or obscure and would likely alienate anybody he wanted to reach. So he just says, just keep it lit. Thanks, Ken. Ba-da-ba-da-ba. Oh, the phones are open. 877-996-2556 if you want to comment on something. 877-996-2556. What else do we have? Oh, yeah, Gingrich again. You know, anybody who doesn't think that the Republican Party, the current Republican Party, and by current, I mean, I don't know what, 40, 50 years, especially now, and the Tea Party, is not totally, completely, 100% anti-African-American, totally racist, You must be out of your goddamn minds. You really must. I mean, we've talked about avoidance and denial, and they're very well-oiled devices that we use sometimes to not face things. But and avoidance and denial have a place. You know, they really do. Somewhere. But to consider that the Republican Party is not saturated with racism is to be so deeply embedded in denial as to render your decision-making progress almost inoperable, or your process almost inoperable. Newt Gingrich defended his controversial comments about food stamps and African Americans yesterday, saying he was, quote, irritated, end quote, by the reaction, and believe people should have welcomed his remarks. Why, of course. Of course he would say that. You see, what happened was, at a recent town hall event, member Gingrich said that if he were invited to speak at the annual NAACP convention, quote, about why the African-American community should demand paychecks and not be satisfied with food stamps, end quote. That's what he would talk about. And, you know, one of his taglines, one of the cuter ones from this evil, bloated son of a bitch, is that Barack Obama is, quote, a food stamp president, end quote. If Barack Obama is anything, it's not a food stamp president. My God. But this is what they do. The whole Republican field, whether it is national, state, county, city politics, is all based on lies. Every single thing they say, and there's no longer any restrictions on the lying. They'll say anything about Obama, anything, rather than stick to the facts. The facts are bad enough, but here's the problem. All of Barack Obama's tendencies toward corporatism are superseded to the nth power by the Republicans. So, if the Republicans got honest and accused Barack Obama of one of the most egregious acts in the history of this republic by signing the NDAA and authorizing the military arrest and detention without charges of American citizens, if the Republican candidates even brought that up, it would focus too much on the fact that all of that was written by Republican administrations and that they support it too. So what do? They lie about everything about Obama. Anything that they say about Obama is a lie. There is so much truth to use to go after Obama. But they can't, because Obama is corporate light. No, really, really, compared to these monsters. So they call him the food stamp president. Astonishing. At an event, I think this is from Huffington Post, at an event that his campaign billed as a Hispanic town hall meeting held at the Don Quixote Mexican restaurant in Manchester, New Hampshire. Gingrich was pressed on the topic by an African-American New Hampshire resident named Yvonne Lamoth. Lamoth said, quote, "My point is, about a week ago, some time ago, you mentioned that black people should be able to earn a paycheck, not be on welfare, implying that black people in general are on welfare. And I really took exception to that because it demeans my accomplishments, my hard work, because I've worked all my life. I've never been on welfare. You know about history. You know that back in the 1930s, Hitler started talking in Germany about a Jewish problem. My question to you is, do you think that blacks represent an American problem? And if you don't think that, will you stop using blacks in general as a stepping stone or a punching bag?" End quote. Gingrich disputed this man's characterization of his comments, and then he blamed the Democratic National Committee for taking them, quote, totally out of context, end quote. Oh, yeah! The Democratic National Committee! They've been following Gingrich around and grabbing the nearest black man and immediately doing a lobotomy on him and filling his head with this little tiny recording device that spews out whatever the DNC wants spewed out. Right, Newt? Then Gingrich addressed this man and said, quote, "I didn't say what you just said. Let me be very clear, because this is something that makes me, quite frankly, very irritated. What I said was, my wife is really an animatronic ghoul. And, oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. What I really said was, there's a real problem in America because you have a president who's put more people on food stamps. People, I didn't say any ethnic group, people than any other president in history. And I said I'd be willing to go to the NAACP annual convention, which most Republicans are not willing to do. And I'd be willing to talk about the importance of food stamps versus paychecks. End quote. No, that's not what you said. That's not what you said at all. And then he went on. Now, I would have thought that there would have been a positive response saying, gosh, here's a Republican who cares enough that he's willing to go and talk to one of the most left-wing organizations in America about how to help the people they represent. End quote. Left-wing organizations? The NAACP? This will show you how deranged this bloated Caucasian really is. And he has become enormous. Have you seen the girth on this man? The NAACP is not a left-wing organization. It is one of the most conservative organizations in America. I mean, real conservative. They want, you know, equal rights for everybody. With the possible exception of gay folk. Left-wing. See, this is what happens to so many Caucasians. They start eating and they can't stop and they get bigger and bigger, like Limbaugh, like Newt now. They just start to blow up. They get bigger and bigger. They get bigger. And they just keep doing this until finally their brains become encased in this enormous sack of fat. And this pressure then starts to bear down and they say things like, well, I'd like to go to the NAACP and talk to them about getting up welfare. And that's what's happened. I mean, this happens to a lot of Caucasians. I don't know why. I don't. Well, black folk have their problems, too. I'm not saying any one group has an exclusive contract on being good people. But we're talking Caucasians here, because since the Pisa man left, yeah, the DNC caught him up, too, right? Well, I'm going to quit. I'm going to get out of this because, you know, my character is being assailed. No, it's not your character, punk. I'm glad you're gone. But we're talking right now about this huge, enormous, you know, and every single primary, it looks like Gingrich has snuck around and eaten some of the voters. He just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Well, that's not what I said.
Now, what did you say?
I don't know. Oh, wait a minute. I gotta go get a cheeseburger here. Jesus Christ. All right. My zipper's bust. My buckles break. I'm too much man for you to take. The pavement cracks when I fall down. I've got more chips in Chinatown. But I never used a phone booth. But I never seen a tool.
Side bends or sit-ups, but please don't lose that butt. Some brothers wanna play that hard role and tell you that the butt ain't gold, so they toss it and leave it, and I pull up quick to retrieve it. So Cosmo says you're fat. Well, I ain't down with that, cause your waist is small and your curves are kicking, and I'm thinking about sticking to the beanpole dames in the magazine.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
Some knucklehead tried to diss, cause his girls are on my list. He had game, but he chose to hit him, and I pull up quick to get with him. So ladies, if the butt is round and you want a triple S throwdown, dial 1-900-MIX-A-LOT and kick them nasty thoughts. Baby got back.
Past the hour. Oh, poor Newt Gingrich. Not poor Newt Gingrich. I'll be so glad when he becomes a little grease mark on the pavement on the road to the White House. He soon will be. They're not going to like him in South Carolina because he is a Catholic. And for a few other reasons, too. But, you know, do these Caucasians ever think to themselves, before they make a statement like that, that most of the people on some sort of public assistance are white? Most of the people who receive food stamps are white. Now, I can hear the Republicans out there going, well, it's because there's more whites than there are black people, goddammit! Spin it any way you want to, but most of the people on welfare are white folk. Most of the people getting food stamps are white folk, which is not to demonize them. Look what other white folk have done. You know, if you really want to get all funked up with this, that's all right with me. But if you really want to do that, you got to consider something, truth seeker, that the big time CEOs up on Wall Street and in D.C. and other places that screwed everything up, they're not based in Africa. They are not African Americans. Last time I checked, these suckers are all white. Hello. Which is not to say, now don't get me wrong, I'm not going to, you know, do a Newt Gingrich here and say there are no black billionaires. I'm sure there are six or one or somewhere, sometime, someplace. I'm talking about here now, right? I'm talking about here now. All those folks at Goldman Sachs. I don't know. They may have some black folk up in the higher echelons, but the ones who make the decisions at places like that, because of the inherent racism? Come on. And remember when all the CEOs of all the big investment banks sat down there at that witness table? Just like all the big CEOs of all those tobacco companies sat down at that witness table? Just like all the CEOs of the big pharmaceutical companies sat down at that witness table? Tell me how many people of color you happen to see there. Huh? Oh, Newt, you miserable bastard. You really are. You and Sean ought to just get together and do what you used to do back here in Atlanta. I mean, you really should. Just, you know, let it go. Let it be. Jim is in Las Vegas, listening on Sirius. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, Mike, what you were talking about earlier at the beginning of the show about the...
Tebow? About Tebow?
Yeah. It just reminded me of a joke I remember from Comedy Central years ago, decades ago.
Now, it doesn't have any cuss words in it, does it?
No.
Okay.
Basically, it's like, you know, every time a team wins a Super Bowl or a big game, they always thank Jesus.
Right.
The premise is, you know, just once you'd like to see somebody say, yeah, we were in the game. Until Jesus stepped in, he hates our team.
Yeah. I've never seen, you know, I am certainly not religious and I don't believe this stuff, but a lot of folks do. And I just wonder sometimes how people feel. I guess they feel okay to see their religion debased by a chump ass football player who can't pass straight. It just cracks me up. The way religion, especially Christianity, I don't know. Do Jews or Muslims, does a Muslim whip out a prayer rug when he scores a touchdown and bow down to Mecca? Does a Jew immediately do whatever a Jew does when they score a football, a touchdown? Why is it only Christians that do this?
Well, you're right. You know where I'm going, or you seem to know, because what I was thinking was, what percentage of the, you know, there's 50 players on each team, there's 32 teams, there's 1,600
right.
players. I say 90-some-odd percent are Christian.
Maybe higher.
90, yeah. So automatically there's a 90-some-odd percent chance that a Christian's going to be on the winning team.
Yeah, but think about all the Christians that exist out there, where you just said, and I'm sure they do, think about all those Christians who on any given football day listens to their prayers and says, nah, I don't think so. I got too much riding on Baltimore on this one, so I'm gonna let you guys just kind of, you know, float. Yeah, I gotta leave there, Jim. Thanks, man. I hear what you're saying. You're absolutely right. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Choice and gay wedding, widespread digging, hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jail by conservative Christian, right-wing Republican, straight white.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Before the hour, we have a couple open lines here if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. This hour is being sponsored by Ken in Augustine. Hope I got that right, Ken. Ken in Augustine, who says any message he would have would be depressing or obscure and would likely alienate anyone he might want to reach. So he just says, quote, just keep it lit. Thanks, Ken. I love it. Mary is in Early, Iowa. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. I was listening to Joe Madison today on television, and the guy that came after him told this true story about a third grade teacher, and I think it was La Crosse, Georgia, who had a math problem that I'll try to get these figures right.
Well, I've got the story right in front of me.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, you tell it.
Well,
and I want to tell you something else. I think Rick Santorum has kind of a dirty mind.
You do?
Yes, I do. He spends all his time thinking about sex.
Other people's.
Yeah.
Right.
You tell the story.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. There is a school district out here. It's Norcross, Georgia. And one of the teachers in the middle school out there, presented a test. It was supposed to be a math test. And the math test said, referencing slavery, historical slavery in the United States, the math test said, there are 56 orange trees in the grove. If each slave picks the oranges off these trees, how many trees will each slave? You know, it was a division problem. And then it also, a question further into the test said, how many whippings, how many whips are used to beat the slaves? All right. There are two ways to look at this. And when I first saw the story, my first attitude, Mary, was, oh my God, there's right wingers who are preparing their children, their students, their white students to be slave masters. And I thought, no. Those are, left wingers who are trying to make a point about slavery in the South, and they're using math to do it. And I thought, wait a second, is it the left or the right? What the hell is going on here? And to be honest with you, Mary, I still don't know. I will say this, it's very inappropriate to have questions like that on a math test. Now, I don't know what point the teacher was trying to make. And locally, in the Atlanta area, I've seen the story on local television, and nobody seems to know what to do. The right wing is screaming, see how the left wing tries to blah, blah, blah. The liberals are screaming, see how they're, you know, this wasn't a math test. This was a training manual. So, it's just madness. But I think the test was put together, I believe, by this middle school or elementary school teacher, and all copies of the test have now been shredded. The school administrator picked it up, and so on and so forth. Whatever the motive was, I think it was very inappropriate. We have history classes. We have civics classes. We have ample opportunity to straightforwardly teach people what slavery was about and how horrifying it was, and just on and on and on. I don't think it is very cool at all, Mary, to slip questions like that, no matter what the teacher was trying to do. And she may not have been trying to make a political point at all. It just may have been something that she put in there. But that is a very inappropriate way to teach math or to teach about slavery history in this country. That's my take on it.
It's my take on it, too. Whichever way it was.
Yeah, whichever way it was. It was just madness here. I mean, what is this? What kind of craziness is this, you know?
It's our evangelical, and don't tell me that those teabaggers are not racist.
Well, they are.
they are used by the Republican Party.
They are indeed. They are indeed, much like Hitler used the brown shirts before he came to power.
Right.
He let them go out and beat everybody up and push people around and, just cause general hell. And then the Night of the Long Knives occurred, and Eric Rohm, who was the leader of the brown shirts, was done away with quite nicely by Heinrich Himmler, who decided, no, we're not going to have two competing bully boys here. We're just going to have the SS, Waffen SS. So, you know, we've got the historical record, and this is what the teabaggers are to the Republican Party. It's the brown shirts. And I don't think anybody with a brain has any trouble recognizing that immediately. Right?
Right. I knew it from the first. I've known it for years and years when the Heritage Foundation first came out with this crap.
Mm-hmm.
Years and years, back in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, believe me, they have grown beyond my wildest dreams. Wildest thoughts.
I know. I thought that fascism pretty much was being destroyed back when I was a kid. I can remember my mother listening to the Army McCarthy hearings, and being a little kid, you know, I just kind of hung out. Television was brand new, and we had just gotten one, and I was fascinated by the television. But one of the first things that she used to watch, I can remember, and I've said this before, she would be standing there ironing with the TV on, and I would be crawling around the floor with this, I don't mean to make it sound like I was, a toddler, I was a young kid. And I can remember asking her why those people seemed to be so angry and what they were talking about. And of course, my mother, being a traditional Democrat, was just shocked by what was going on until finally, McCarthy was asked if he, at long last, sir, have you no decency or whatever that question was that was finally asked of him. So I thought, as a kid growing up, that it had pretty much been squashed out, this fascism, until they assassinated Kennedy. And then it was very clear to me that it was not squashed out at all. So.
Too bad, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Too bad it wasn't squashed out. Are you doing
well, Mike?
Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Well, it's just, I don't want to take up any more of your time, but that just shocked me, and it made me so angry.
I know.
And I think there are so many things that should make us angry, and we just go along as if nothing is happening.
That's right. I know. I wanted to ask you, how are you doing? Have you been?
I'm doing fine down on the highway, and boy, am I getting a response!
Tell us about it.
Well, it's good. It's good. Honks, waves, thumbs up. Very few do not respond.
That's good to
hear.
This
war that we want to be over, but it won't be over. Do you actually think we're leaving Iraq?
No, we're leaving 15,000 operatives there.
Yes, and how many paramilitaries?
There's no way people like you and me will ever know that.
Count them. Mm-hmm.
Unless we count them, or unless WikiLeaks decides to
Lord bless them.
Get a hold of documents that tell us the truth. So,
well, let's hope for that.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Mary, take it easy. Remember, non illegitimi carborundum, which loosely translated from the Latin means don't let the bastards grind you down.
I won't.
All right, Mary.
You too.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care.
You too. Bye.
All
thanks,
right,
Mike.
All right, bye-bye. That's close enough. Non illegitimi carborundum. Kevin is in Colorado Springs. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, good evening, Mike. It is so good to hear your voice again.
Well,
I just got back from Florida,
yeah,
where I stayed with my Republican parents.
Oh, yeah?
And it was quite interesting. I kept biting my tongue most of the time,
mm-hmm,
when my father would start to talk about politics, but he finally started talking about the Fox line about how to move on people or homeless, hippies, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically lost it at that point because I'm an Occupy and Move On member.
Mm-hmm.
I pointed out to him the Constitution and the right to assemble, free speech, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you called it madness a couple minutes ago. And it is. I just can't. My father is a former union person.
Are you kidding?
I'm not. He was a former union person, and he said something about the unions, how they should be allowed to have free elections, you know, with the right to work stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just blown away by how people fall for it. I don't know if it's age,
mm-hmm,
or it's just an anger that's there because
it may just be exposed to too much propaganda. Hold on a second, Kevin. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to a new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been so graciously sponsored by Ken in Augustine, who says any message he might have included would have been depressing or obscure and would likely alienate anybody he wanted to reach. So he just says, just keep it lit. Thanks, Ken. All right, back to Kevin. Go ahead, Kevin, wrap it up here. This story about your parents is pretty sad.
Well, it's pretty sad, but it's also it's fascinating to me how people can believe what they believe, and you explain to them, me on the left, I explain to them, I'm not wild about what President Obama has done, but for mm-hmm. totally different reasons.
Right.
And I try to explain to them it's both parties, it's both systems,
right,
and the government's broken, and they just can't. You know, and it's not a criticism of it, of them, as much as sadness that they can't seem to see that there are people out there hurting.
Right.
And it's because of what's happened over the last 30 years.
Well, yeah. I agree with you. I didn't have that problem with my father was not the least bit political, but my mother was very much a Democrat. And I just never had that problem. And when I say it's sad, I come at it from the standpoint that you do. You know, they're your parents. It's not that they're being evil. It's just that they, you know, no one has taken the time, and you probably would be the wrong person to try to educate them. No parent likes to be educated by their kid, although I get educated by my second grader every single day. She tells me things that she's absolutely convinced I have no idea about. But that's understandable when they're seven. But when, you know, when you become an adult and you try to tell your parents something, their brains kind of lock down. It's like, hey, you know, I've been around, you know, 35 years longer than you have. What the hell are you going to try to tell me something? So I get what you're saying, Kevin. It's a shame. Maybe if you just keep working on them and you know, trying to lovingly explain to them how they've kind of fallen off their own path, maybe that'll work. Kevin, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Appreciate you checking in. Steven's in Burbank, California. Hello, Steven.
Hi, Mike. I have a very fun story about Bob Larson.
Oh, the guy with the demon test?
Yeah, and the PayPal and all that other good stuff.
Yeah.
I was in Ridgecrest. I was an evangelical Bible thumper. I was a believer. Not right wing, you know, just the good stuff, you know, like, you know, alleviate poverty and stuff like that.
Right.
And Bob Larson comes through town, Ridgecrest, California, in the late 70s. And I had just gotten out of Saracosa. I got a job at the drive-in theater where I got the money to buy my Buick, which I still have. And here's Bob Larson on stage, and here's a whole bunch of beautiful rock albums, you know, Axis, Bolt of Love, Jimi Hendrix, you know, Allman Brothers, everything. And he's stomping on them, crutching them down.
Oh, no.
And I thought, gee whiz, what's this, you know? And then he plugs in an amp and his guitar, and he puts straps on an electric guitar and puts on a 400-watt amplifier, full blast, and cuts licks like you wouldn't believe. I mean, this guy was good. I mean, I have to admit it. This guy is really good. So, you know, name somebody. Name Hendrix, Randy Rose. This guy was good. And here's the thing that I get out of it. He's a frustrated would-be rock star. He could not make the cut in the big time, and so he went to the other little realm where he cash in big time.
He went to the dark side.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Come to think of it, he had tables out in the lobby with all the merchandise, you know, here, fork over your dough and all this neat stuff.
Right.
You know, and I was smoking, and I went, Satan has me. I'm addicted to nicotine. Rah, rah, rah. So I bowed down, and he taps me on the head a few times. And I quit smoking for about 10 days. You know, but... you know, being a fanatic, that I started reading the Bible, and I read it from the first to the last, from the first page, you know, cover to cover.
Right.
That was the first time I read it. Then after I moved here to Burbank, I read it again, cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I became an atheist.
Yeah, I've done that. I've just done it once. cover to cover, although I have gone back. But, you know, I love the Song of Solomon, and I love Revelation. And I also like Leviticus, and I like Deuteronomy, because those four books to me are just, I mean, it's like doing bad acid and having someone lock you inside a steel drum and then beat on the sides of the drum, you know, while you're tripping your brains out. I have never read anything as berserko as those four books of the Bible. It's so weird. It's fun to go back
and read,
especially Revelation. You know, John of Patmos, I guess, this Turkish guy who starts writing this stuff about all these beasts and demons. And it was, you know, in my opinion, a lot of, I guess I've just absorbed this from biblical scholars. He was writing about political issues, much the same way Dante was writing about political issues in Italy when he wrote the Divine Comedy. But here's John, this Turk, writing all this crazed stuff about beasts and horrors and dragons and the pale horsemen and swords and death and destruction and seven-headed monsters. And, you know, the reference being, I think, to Rome or somebody, maybe Martians. I have no idea. But those books, those are the four books that I get the most fun out of reading.
My favorite is Ecclesiastes.
Oh, that's that's a good one. That's a good
one. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
And as far as John, the revelation of St. John the Divine was, some speculated that he ate stale old rye bread or something. You know,
right.
And LSD.
and got natural, what is it called? Ergo or something?
Enlightenment.
Stephen, I got to leave it there.
Take us out of our consciousness.
That's true. Thanks, Stephen. Take care. Watch out for ergot. How do you pronounce that? ERGOT. What is that stuff that grows on rye bread? Is that ergot? I don't know what it is. I don't care. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. So MSNBC finally got around to, their term, suspending fascist commentator Pat Buchanan. And look, I know a lot of people don't like the misuse of the term fascist. This is not a misuse. Pat Buchanan is a fascist by any definition. He is also, he's almost Nazi-like in his characterization of minorities, immigrants, Jews. Buchanan always, I could never figure out why MSNBC ever had this freak on the air. He belongs on Fox News. This is where all the fascists are supposed to gather. Fox. MSNBC, they have their neoliberal commentators. CNN, they can't find their ass with both hands. But everybody knows that Fox is where these fascists belong. So hopefully Pat Buchanan will wind up there now that he's been suspended rather than fired, but suspended. Apparently, he has a new book out called Suicide of a Superpower. No, he's not referring to the old Soviet Union. He's referring to the United States. And he's got a couple of chapters in the book. One is entitled The End of White America. The other is called The Death of Christian America. Well, oh, God. You know, I'm not even going to get into it, but maybe some other time. But Buchanan, I can never figure out why. He had such a jokey face of fascism. You know what I'm saying? Limbaugh's fascism is enraged and bulbous and gluttonous and just this huge, ponderous, screaming proto-fascist Rush Limbaugh. But Buchanan was, you know, he was everybody's buddy. He'd go on Joe Scarborough's show. He'd go on, occasionally show up on, I think, Rachel Maddow's show. Sometimes he'd show, you know, hey, hi, how are you? Yeah, I still hate Negroes and Jews. Yeah, hello. A super Catholic. He's one of those Army of God Catholics. What are they? Opus Dei or... Hey. So Buchanan, Tony Blankley died over the weekend, too. If you're familiar with, Blankley, he used to be Newt Gingrich's, I think, press secretary or advisor. Blankley was the type of conservative that you could sit down and talk to. He was wrong on every single issue, but he was not a frothing, foaming proto-fascist. What else do we have from the wonderful world of right-wing politics? I've got something for you that I've been meaning to do. I guess it'd be proper to say do again, because we have approached this issue a few times. And it's about the how to tell if the country that you're living in is drifting toward fascism. It's pretty simple and straightforward. Lawrence Britt has this latest in Free Inquiry magazine. Britt is a novelist. He's also he's a frequent writer, contributor to various publications. But he points out that we're 2.5 generations now removed from the horrors of Nazi Germany, and he also makes this the clear statement that German and Italian fascism form the historical models that define fascism. There have been other forms, of course. There have been other flavorings, colorings of fascism. But German and Italian fascism are the two that pretty much have given the world the definitions and the explanations of what fascism really is. For the purpose of the perspective that he wrote here for Free Inquiry magazine, he considers the following regimes. Of course, Nazi Germany and Fascist Italy. And then, of course, Franco's Spain, Salazar's Portugal, Greece under Papadopoulos, Chile under Pinochet, and Indonesia under Suharto. And, you know, he points out that they constitute a mixed bag of national identities and cultures and developmental levels and so forth, and history. But they all follow the fascist or proto-fascist model in obtaining, expanding, and maintaining power. And if one takes the time to analyze, as Lawrence Britt obviously has, as have many other Democrats, small d, if you analyze the common threads that link these regimes, you'll see recognizable patterns of national behavior and abuse of power. And so I think, you know, it bears repeating, even though we've gone over this a couple of times. Number one, powerful and continuing expressions of nationalism. We're going to give you the list here of how you can identify when a nation is drifting into or already has arrived on the front door of fascism. Powerful and continuing expressions of nationalism. This includes the displays of flags and bunting to the ubiquitous lapel pins, the fervor to show patriotic nationalism both on the part of the regime itself and of citizens caught up in the frenzy. Catchy slogans, pride in the military, demands for unity. Number two, disdain for the importance of human rights. The regimes that he uses as models viewed human rights as of little value and a hindrance to realizing the objectives of the ruling class. Through clever use of propaganda, the population was brought to accept these human rights abuses by marginalizing, even demonizing, those being targeted. When abuse was egregious, the tactic was to use secrecy, denial, and disinformation. Sound familiar? Any connection, do you see, to our country? When you consider disappearances and rendition and torture and interrogation techniques that are not interrogation, but actual torture. Number three, identification of enemies used as scapegoats, as a unifying cause. And as Britt points out, the most significant common thread among these regimes that he's using as a model was the use of scapegoating as a means to divert the people's attention from other problems, to shift blame for failures, to channel frustration in controlled directions. The methods of choice, in other words, relentless propaganda and disinformation. Sound familiar? Are you exposed to relentless propaganda? If you are Lowe's home improvement shop, do you pull your advertising from a program called American Muslim or something because a couple of freaks write you a letter that contains propaganda and disinformation, blah, blah, blah? The regimes he uses as an example here would incite so-called spontaneous acts against the target scapegoats, like demanding that Lowe's pull their advertising. And the scapegoats have usually been communists, socialists, liberals, Jews, ethnic or racial minorities, traditional national enemies, members of other religions, secularists, homosexuals, and, quote, terrorists, as defined by the ruling elite. So those are the first three. And there's a bunch more, and we're going to go over the rest of them here because you may come to the same conclusion that I came to, and that is that we are in the throes right now of, I've been talking about this for years and nothing new, we are in the throes of having fascism delivered to the United States. We'll be right back. So, fascism, anyone? Number one, powerful and continuing expressions of nationalization, or nationalism, I should say. Number two, disdain for the importance of human rights. Number three, identification of enemies or scapegoats as a unifying cause. Number four, on the road to fascism, if it's not already on the doorstep, the supremacy of the military and avid militarism. And as Britt points out, ruling elites always identified closely with the military and the industrial infrastructure that supported it. You know, the military-industrial complex. A disproportionate share of national resources is allocated to the military, even when domestic needs are acute. Oh, my goodness. That sounds like, you know, today. What did Obama sign the other day? $1 trillion, when you get right down to it, $1 trillion weapons budget, $1 trillion weapons budget, when we have an infrastructure that is just crumbling into pieces here. Number five, rampant sexism. Beyond the simple fact that the political elite and the national culture are male-dominated, the regimes that Britt uses as examples of fascism inevitably viewed women as second-class citizens. They were adamantly anti-abortion and adamantly homophobic. And those attitudes were usually codified in laws that enjoyed strong support by the orthodox religion of the country, thus lending the regime cover for its abuses against women, against gay people. Number six, a controlled mass media. What, here? Oh, no! Under some of the regimes that Britt uses as an example, the mass media were under strict, direct control and could be relied upon never to stray from the party line. Other regimes exercise more subtle power to ensure media orthodoxy. Methods included the control of licensing and access to resources, economic pressure, appeals to patriotism, and implied threats. There's one he left off, and that is moving liberal or progressive programming to the graveyard shift on radio stations. Number 7, obsession with national security. Oh, my God. Inevitably, Britt writes, a national security apparatus was under direct control of the ruling elite. It was usually an instrument of oppression, operating in secret and beyond any constraints. Its actions were justified under the rubric of protecting, quote, national security, end quote. And questioning its activities was portrayed as unpatriotic or even treasonous. Why? That sounds so much like, oh no, it couldn't be. We have a Democrat as a president. We have God-fearing, America-loving Republicans running the country. Well, I guess I just made my own case. Number 8, religion and the ruling elite tied together. Well, my God, all you have to do is listen to these freaks running for the Republican nomination, and you hear this all the time. Unlike communist regimes, the fascist and proto-fascist regimes were never proclaimed as godless by their opponents. In fact, most of the regimes attached themselves to the predominant religion of the country and chose to portray themselves as militant defenders of that religion. The fact that the ruling elite's behavior was incompatible with the precepts of the religion were generally ignored. Propaganda kept up the illusion that the ruling elites were defenders of the faith and opponents of the godless. A perception was manufactured that opposing the power elite was tantamount to an attack on religion. Now, how many times have you heard that recently, truth-seekers? The Christian crazy people in this country absolutely insisting, whether they're Protestant or Catholic, insisting that the Christian religion is under unrelenting attack by godless, terrible atheists and secularists and liberals and homosexuals and oh my God! But the religion that totally dominates this country, that dictates what the textbooks are going to say, that dictates what's going to be spoken in political campaigns, yes, that religion declares itself under unrelenting attack, and its freedoms are being absolutely shredded by the left.
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. 25 before the hour. Lawrence Britt, article in Free Inquiry magazine, the 14 common threads that previously fascist countries on this tired, dying earth have used to gain power, and it's now being used in this country. You can, while he doesn't make that declaration, Britt does not, you can read the 14 common threads and come to your own conclusion. So far, we have powerful and continuing expressions of nationalism, disdain for the importance of human rights, identification of enemies or scapegoats, the supremacy of the military or avid militarism, rampant sexism, a controlled mass media, the religion or the religious ruling elite, religion and the ruling elite tied together. Now we are to the power of corporations protected. Oh no. Britt writes, although the personal life of ordinary citizens was under strict control in these fascist regimes, the ability of large corporations to operate in relative freedom was not compromised. The ruling elite saw the corporate structure as a way to not only ensure military production, but also as an additional means of social control. Members of the economic elite think CEOs of the big corporations. Members of the economic elite were often pampered by the political elite to ensure continued mutuality of interests, especially in the repression of the have-nots citizens. That would be the 99%. Oh my goodness, this is very scary. Number 10, the power of labor suppressed or eliminated. As Britt writes, since organized labor was seen as the one power center that could challenge the political hegemony of the ruling elite and its corporate allies, it was inevitably crushed or made powerless. The poor formed an underclass viewed with suspicion or outright contempt. Under some regimes, being poor was considered akin to a vice. The crushing of the labor movement. Now, none of this is happening here, right, Truth Seeker? He asked with way too much sarcasm. Number 11, disdain and suppression of intellectuals and the arts. The arts would include poets, writers. As Britt lays it out, intellectuals and the inherent freedom of ideas and expression associated with them were anathema to these regimes, these fascist regimes. Intellectual and academic freedom were considered subversive to national security and the patriotic ideal. How many times have you heard that? Huh? Universities were tightly controlled, politically unreliable faculty harassed or eliminated, unorthodox ideas or expressions of dissent were strongly attacked, silenced, or crushed. To these fascist regimes, art and literature should serve the national interests, or they had no right to exist. Sounds like Soviet fascism, doesn't it? Number 12. Obsession with crime and punishment. Ooh. Most of the fascist regimes that Britt is using here as examples, most of them maintained draconian systems of criminal justice with huge prison populations. Whoa! That would be us! We have the largest prison population in terms of a raw number and percentage of our population on Earth. And we are one of the few, two or three, so-called Western or industrialized nations that still apply capital punishment. We execute people in our criminal justice system. And as Britt points out, in these societies, the police were often glorified. They had almost unchecked power, leading to rampant abuse. Normal or political crime, and he puts quotes around the word normal. Normal and political crime were often merged into trumped-up criminal charges and sometimes used against political opponents of the regime. Think of the former governor of Alabama, the Democrat. Fear and hatred of criminals or traitors was often promoted among the population as an excuse for more police power. Fear. More police power. Number 13, rampant cronyism and corruption. In the societies Brit is using, those in business circles and close to the power elite were often able to use their position to enrich themselves. This corruption worked both ways. Think of Mitt Romney. This corruption worked both ways. The power elite would receive financial gifts and property from the economic elite, who in turn would gain the benefit of government favoritism. Members of the power elite were in a position to obtain vast wealth from other sources as well. For example, by stealing national resources. With the national security apparatus under control and the media muzzled, this corruption was largely unconstrained and not well understood by the general population. Why, you mean people like the Koch brothers, who have had access to natural resources anytime they want them because, or anytime they want it, because they provide so much money to the power elite that can grant them that permission? Oh my. And number 14, fraudulent elections. Fraudulent elections. Elections in the form of plebiscites or public opinion polls were usually bogus. When actual elections with candidates were held, they would usually be perverted by the power elite to get the desired result. Common methods of that perversion included maintaining control of the election machinery, intimidating and disenfranchising opposition voters, destroying or disallowing legal votes. Think about what the Republican Party has been doing in 20 plus states in this country. Eliminating the possibility of people to vote. Eliminating it. Because they are maintaining control of the election machinery, and they are intimidating and disenfranchising opposition voters. That's number 14. Now, does any of this ring alarm bells? Any, in the general population? Do you see anybody on television talking about this, the talking heads? Whether they are so-called liberals or proto-fascists or conservatives or middle-of-the-roaders, do you see anybody talking about these 14 defining characteristics of a country that is so close to fascism as to render the little slip of daylight still existing between fascism and the current system meaningless? Do you hear anybody talking about this? Other than this program. Anybody? No, you don't. And anyone who does is immediately labeled as, oh, God damn, he's kind of weird, man. Did you hear what he said? He's in fascism. Oh, Jesus, they all use that. They all use it. Now, you may hear psychopaths referring to the political system as it was designed as being fascist, or the misuse of the term fascist. The right-wingers toss it around as though it were so much confetti, but that's what right-wingers do. Accuse your opponent of the very thing that you are doing. You know, the best defense is a good offense? Huh? Oh my God. So does any of this ring alarm bells? Any of these 14 characteristics? Up to this point, not really. No, after all, this is America. And we are a, we're a democracy. We're a constitutional democracy. We're a democratic republic, you know, and we've got the rule of law. We have a constitution. We have a constitution, you know, that has a Fourth Amendment, a Fifth Amendment, a First Amendment, an Eighth Amendment, and a Tenth Amendment, all of which are no longer operative. But we still have it. It's still there. We also have, you know, a free press. and, you know, honest elections and a well-informed public. Right? Maybe. Maybe not so much. What do you think, Truth Seeker?
No matter what the reason's for, and your flag cow won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I went to the bank this morning, and the cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit. I took them up on what he said. Your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what.
The hour. So I don't know if it really makes any difference to spend an hour of broadcast time like I just did, going over once again the 14 of the defining characteristics, and there are a couple more that the author of this particular piece, Lawrence Britt, does not get into, but the 14 that he has listed here are so blatantly obvious. I mean, how bright does one have to be in order to see what's happening in this country and want to do something about it? And, you know, I hear right-wingers talking about, well, Obama is a fascist. You know, Obama is a temporary office, a placeholder, as most of these people are. It's usually the people who are operating in the shadow of the presidency, like a Dick Cheney, who is actually pushing more than the president himself could push toward fascism. But it is the other institutions that are bringing about fascism in the United States, whether it is this whiny-ass religion, and all the whiny-assism is coming from the Christian right, whether it is Protestant or Catholic. Muslims in this country have a legitimate claim for persecution. While the Jews do not make the claim, if you look at any of the organizations that keep track of hate crimes, you will find that the majority, yes, the majority of hate crimes committed in this country are committed against Jews. Not against gay folk, not against Muslims. But who is it who is screaming and whining and wetting their collective diapers? It is the Christian right. About, oh my goodness, we're being so discriminated against. And then, of course, the politicians pick up on that. You know, every time I hear Gingrich talk about how the Catholic Church is being denied the right to help people get adoptions completed because the filthy federal government is forcing the Catholic Church to give up its religion, which is not the case at all. What Gingrich and most of, if not all, of the Republicans refuse to acknowledge is that the way the country's constituted, we have secular law. That's how the country is to be run. And Congress shall make no laws restricting freedom of speech or prohibiting freedom of speech. But secular law is first. Religious law is second, third, 20th. How many times do you hear the Christian right screaming about, well, the Muslims are going to impose Sharia law on this country, while they themselves, the Christians, are working like little beavers to impose biblical law, Christian law, on the country? This is the kind of hypocrisy and duplicity that really, really, really turns my stomach. I don't know what it does to you. You may be a Christian. You may sit there and say, well, Mike, now come on. We're Christians. They're Muslims. And if you do that, I rest my case. So again, I don't know to what extent it really makes any difference on a 10-cent radio program like this one. Or no, 25-cent radio program. That's right, we're a 2-bit radio program. I don't know if it makes any difference taking an hour to once again go down that list of warning signs. It may be a complete exercise in futility to do it again, to do it even once. The thing about fascism is it usually is not imposed, by an invasion. Fascism usually develops within the so-called body politic inside a country, inside its elites, its military elites, its industrial elites, its religious elites, its political elites, its economic elites. All of a sudden, it's there, and people look around and say, well, and one of the reasons, of course, that occurs is because capitalism much prefers to deal, when it's dealing externally, with a fascist regime. Democracy is too messy. Socialism is too much of a threat. Give me good old-fashioned fascism, is what the industrialists will say. We want fascism. We want military dictatorships in the countries with whom we do business, because we can buy them. The people underneath the military dictatorship can be executed en masse. They can be sent to extermination camps. They're very easy to eliminate when you're dealing with a fascist government or a military government. So I just occasionally, periodically, get lost, get stuck in the quicksand of these screeds that lay out the defining characteristics of fascism and how a nation moves into that political realm. And it gets my attention. I think, you know, here's 14 of them, and almost every single one is has something to do with what is happening in this country right now. And, I just wonder why all the talking heads, all the liberals and the progressives and so on and so forth on the various media outlets in this country, why they don't talk about it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.